The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Singenberger Show, third and final hour of this Independence Day edition of the program. Tuned by the great Bonnie Raitt. No Getting Over You, bringing us back to kick off this hour. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to read aloud, as I did on both Steph and Tubbs Show and George Brockler's show yesterday and this morning, respectively, because, well, I want to do it again because I think this is the basis, this is the root of our celebration on this Independence Day. It's the document that started it all, and we should read it, we should learn it, we should understand it, we should share it with a young person in our lives, or many young people. You got kids, you got grandkids. Talk to them about it. Discuss it with them, because what's happening across the country right now with all of the civil unrest is largely a result, I would say, of historical and civic illiteracy that is running rampant across the country, not just among millennials and Generation Z, although they seem to be, I say this as a millennial myself, more prominent these days in terms of those who are historically and civically illiterate, but other generations too. Most Americans cannot name three branches of government, cannot even name two, maybe even one, and clearly don't understand the roots of this country and the founding principles and precepts of the United States of America. We need to do a better job at educating future generations and educating ourselves on these principles, precepts, and histories. Now, understanding what's happening across the country is important. And that's why I want to share a portion of an interview I did earlier this week on my web show, Jimmy at the Crossroads, that I produce in partnership with The Washington Examiner. This is an interview that I did with Rashini Rajkumar, who's been on this program many times over the last several years. And I want to share this because she's in Minneapolis, Minnesota, which is the epicenter of the civil unrest and the racial tensions and so forth that's happening across the country. And not only that, but they're defunding the police there. They're dismantling the police. At least they're working towards it, having put onto the ballot an initiative to dismantle the police department in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So what the heck is going on there? I checked in with Rashini Rajkumar to find out an answer to that exact question. I am pleased to be welcomed once again by Rashini Rajkumar, who is a strategic communication and crisis coach to C-suite executives. She hosts Real Talk with Rashini on WCCO Radio in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and the Real Leaders with Rashini podcast. Rashini is a licensed attorney, a former TV reporter. We call upon her, as others do, to offer commentary on leadership, crisis management, political strategy, PR blunders, and more. Her book is Communicate That, and her website, ownyourwow.com. And tomorrow, by the way, will be Own Your Wow Wednesday, just so you know. Rashini Rajkumar, welcome back to Jimmy at the Crossroads.
It's great to be with you, Jimmy. Thanks so much. Lots to get into today.
Absolutely. Well, it is so good to have you on, and especially given everything that we're seeing happening across the country. But I want to go on the ground to where you live, in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where everything in terms of this social unrest that we have seen began. What are things like right now, Rashini?
Well, it's still pretty unstable. I mean, we're not having nightly peaceful protests. The regular violence, I mean, it just depends on how you're defining it. You know, we're not seeing a bunch of things burn down, but there have been gunshots multiple days over the last 2 weeks. So there have been deaths. There has been, you know, some of that is called gang violence. But, you know, the people of Minneapolis, and I am a resident of the city, are very confused about the state of things, because we have a city council that is moving in the different steps to what they are saying is defunding the Minneapolis Police Department, possibly disbanding it. And you have a lot of citizens wondering, what does that even mean? Because we have not heard a real concrete plan as to what would replace the Minneapolis PD as we know it.
Yeah, and we'll get to that a little bit more here in just a moment with you, Rashini Rajkumar, because on Sunday on your radio show, Real Talk with Rashini, you had the head of the police union in Minneapolis for the Minneapolis Police Union, Lieutenant Bob Kroll, on your program. And I have a few sound bites from that that I want to share. And before we get to the defunding of police part of this, I do want to play a clip where he talks about sort of the messaging side in the wake of this, because there were people in the wake of the murder, because there were people across Minneapolis and around the country who were looking for the police to condemn this. But at the same time, the role of the police union is to stand up for and represent the interests of police officers. So you asked him specifically about some of the messaging, and cut one here from your program on WCCO Radio, Real Talk with Rashini, this past Sunday.
I never saw you coming out and defending Derek Chauvin. Why or why not?
Well, I think for the political leaders to come out like they did, and I mean the mayor, the governor, the attorney general, the director of the Department of Public Safety, for them to come out with such inflammatory statements immediately, it served nobody's purpose. You need to understand that people were cooped up with COVID for several months, And a storm was brewing, and that really blew the lid off. The inflammatory remarks made by political leadership incited, in my opinion, a lot of the violence that occurred in the week that followed. And I think it was irresponsible, and it was politically driven. My statement came out the following day immediately. When I say mine, the statement from our Federation board, I don't do anything in a vacuum. There's 10 of us on the board that are a part of this, that make the decisions, and we issued a very brief statement saying justice will be served, please remain calm, this is going to be a lengthy process, an in-depth investigation, the officers are cooperating with the process, and that was it. So I did make a statement the first day. That wasn't the time to take to the airwaves, rather radio, television, newspaper. Our officers were operating in crisis mode for the week following. Our job as police officers were to try and ensure and instill safety, calm riots, quell the riots, regain control of the city. And our officers were under attack, quite literally, from everything from rocks and bottles to live gunfire on several occasions. We had a lot going on. The lack of leadership from the city made it even more difficult.
Rashini Rajkumar, I want to compliment you on your interview, by the way. It was very interesting, especially from an outsider's perspective, to hear the take of the leader of the police union in Minneapolis. But I think he made some fairly salient points there in terms of some of the political rhetoric that we heard right after the murder happened. But at the same time, there was a desire upon the public to at least get something from the police authorities there, including from the union, and that didn't seem to really come. So what did you make of that?
Well, here's the thing. He alluded to the, or outright said, these different political figures condemning, including the chief of police on 60 Minutes a couple Sundays ago, condemning especially Derek Chauvin, but all those officers. And in his role as the head of the union and the union board in its entirety, their job really is to defend police officers. Now, in the years that I've lived in the city and the years that I've seen different press conferences, and there have unfortunately been some deaths by police officers over these past few years, I have seen Lieutenant Bob Kroll come out right away and stick up for officers. And usually that means he feels they are worth defending. And because he did not come out immediately naming any of these names and defending and in defense mode, that spoke volumes to me that they actually did not at all support the behavior of these officers. And they were trying to follow due process and just wait for some of the video from the body cams to come out. And the fact that they have said these different remarks from the mayor, even the governor, but especially the mayor and the chief of police, now in the pretrial hearing that happened on June 29th, the judge is saying because of some of those inflammatory remarks, he may have to move the trial out of Minneapolis.
Yeah, well, that would make perfect sense. You need to have a jury that can be as fair as and impartial as you can possibly find. I would be surprised if they could even have it in Minneapolis, barring that kind of rhetoric, given what happened in the environment there. But your point is an interesting one and important, I think, because it was sort of like a quiet condemnation. If normally he would come out and defend officers in the past, and he didn't in this case, then that was, it seems, a rebuke of that conduct. Without being very descriptive and blatant about it, like politicians.
Or without violating his fiduciary responsibility, because as you know, with unions, they cannot speak. I mean, they're almost like the attorney. So it'd be like your own attorney coming out and saying you're guilty. They just can't do that. And that was part of the reason, Jimmy, that I invited him on my show as the first part in a three-part series I'm calling Crisis in Minneapolis. Now, way back, I did invite him to come on. Full disclosure, he and his wife, who is a journalist in this town, are friends of mine. So early on, I did invite him, and he did not take that invitation. Now, as a friend, I did not push him. You better believe I wanted the first interview. I did not get the first interview. Gail King did, and some of the other national networks, and then eventually local TV. That all happened last week. And so once that was out, then I revisited it, and he agreed to come on with me. So mine was the first one-on-one radio interview, because most of what he had been doing was a group interview with members of the board. And I disclosed at the top of the hour, the top of this full hour that we spent together, that I know them, they're friends, but he had no idea what I was going to ask him. And I also would not have conducted the interview any differently. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm an ex-TV reporter. I'm an attorney, as you know, and I'm a lover of facts. And that's really what I wanted to get out. And he has been so demonized, vilified in the media across many platforms. I felt it was only fair to really hear in his own words, his voice. And in the following two Sundays, I'm getting into things with hopefully the mayor. The mayor and the chief have been invited, but I've got some Minneapolis City Council members coming on. I have the head of Mad Dads coming on this July 5th. So I really want to talk with the different players, because we are in a very big state of limbo in the city of Minneapolis. I'm actually considering moving out of the city. That's how concerned I am about public safety right now. And I felt I can use my platform, as you do so well in your state, to illuminate and to stop the rhetoric and to stop really the name calling, because that's what's been going on.
Again, Rashini Rajkumar is our guest, WCCO radio host in Minneapolis, Minnesota, host of Real Leaders with Rashini podcast, but Real Talk with Rashini on WCCO radio. So I want to play one more clip from your interview with Lieutenant Bob Kroll, again, the head of the police union in Minneapolis for the Minneapolis Police Department Union Federation. This in cut two is Lieutenant Kroll talking about the push to defund the police, which is, of course, a very hot button issue right now. So let's take a listen to Cut 2 again, Lieutenant Bob Kroll on Sunday with Rashini Rajkumar.
On Friday, the Minneapolis City Council voted to put an amendment on the November ballot as pertains to the Minneapolis Charter. And that, what I understand of it, would be the first step toward defunding or disbanding the Minneapolis police as we know it. What were your thoughts about that?
It's unbelievable. I think since George Floyd's death, we are seeing a preview, if you will, of what's occurring if you would defund the police. The police have been completely overwhelmed. We have retirements in mass occurring. They were short to begin with. Let's not forget, the chief had asked the mayor for 400 more officers over a period of 5 years, and we've got none of those. We've declined. If you want absolute lawlessness, I mean, let's talk about what's occurred here. We've got $500 million in climbing and damages. We've got 1,500 businesses that are destroyed, many that will not return. We've had 120 people shot in the last 5 weeks. We've had over 10 deaths. And if they want more of this to occur, go ahead and defund the police. And I find it ironic that three council members have private security costing the city more than $63,000 to date because they have private security on them, but they won't provide that basic basic right for the citizens that they're supposed to serve.
Rashini, this debate over defunding the police, especially when we see things like what Lieutenant Kroll was describing is happening in Minneapolis, we're seeing in Chicago, other parts of the country, it makes no sense to me. And I'm curious what exactly this ballot initiative would do, how it would go about approaching the idea of dismantling the police department in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and what your take is on what he said in this defund the police debate.
Yeah, it's very confusing, Jimmy, because a few weeks ago, several members, nine members, in fact, of the 12-member city council said they wanted to disband, abolish the police, even was some of the words. And then in the kind of 7 to 10 days following, they retracted that a bit and said, oh, no, we want to start a one-year process to discuss the charter, because the charter provides for public safety in the city. There are specific numbers, X number of officers for every, you know, however many thousand citizens. So they really went back. They tried to walk back what they originally said. And then they got everyone talking, well, what do you really mean then? And then the mayor and the city council agreed they'd start this one-year process. They had a resolution. There was no talk about putting this on the ballot. And on Friday, June 26th, just 2 days before my show here, the city council voted to put it on a ballot measure. So those of us who live in Minneapolis would vote. It's the first step in defunding / disbanding the police department. The mayor immediately held a press conference and said, I am completely confused by this. And in fact, I wrote down the words, despite the promise of this one-year conversation, we're now presupposing an outcome. So he believes the very fact that the city council passed that resolution to put it on the ballot, that they're presupposing the outcome, which is disbanding the police, after he got them to agree to this one-year charter discussion kind of process. So all of us in the city, I mean, literally people are so stunned, are so confused. Sunday on my show was also the first time since the death of George Floyd, people could directly ask Lieutenant Bob Kroll questions. And I was getting calls and so many texts with people saying good things about the police, with people saying, what does this mean? Let's have the city council walk the streets of Minneapolis on their own and see how safe it was. So we've got a lot of anger in the city. And even though there are people who believe reform is needed for the department, and I agree with that, the relations between the community and police all over the country, reform is needed. But there is no part of me that believes we should disband the police.
Well, just a final question on this, and then we'll shift gears in our remaining minutes with you, Rashini Rajkumar. But in terms of the public sentiment, I mean, how likely do you think this kind of initiative could actually be to pass if it actually goes to the voters? Because it seems like there is a large contingent of people in Minneapolis who would say, no, this just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I think you know how I'm going to vote on November 3rd. It would be stunning to me, just stunning, if that ballot measure passes. But that's still, regardless of which way that vote goes, it still leaves us with these months leading up to the election. It's like, come on, we have to have discussions. We have officers that are also resigning, that are leaving. Recruitment efforts were already tough over the last couple of years. They've only gotten tougher. So really, there needs to be some sort of big revamping. But police officers and their families, I'm hearing from some of them, are also in limbo, and they feel they have been unjustly accused of things because of what Derek Chauvin did on May 25th.
Once again, that was a portion of my interview with Urvashini Rajkumar from earlier this week on Jimmy at the Crossroads. Look, you have to hear what's going on in a place like Minneapolis to really understand the depths of what the left is trying to do right now. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I believe that the majority of people who say they believe in Black Lives Matter do believe that Black Lives Matter. They believe that right now is a moment that we need to focus on an idea of racial injustice that's particularly impacting blacks in America today. And these genuine advocates believe that there needs to be reform within police departments. But that doesn't mean that the majority of people who say they support Black Lives Matter actually believe in this crazy lunacy, let's defund the police, let's shut everything down when it comes to police. Yet those radicals, those extremists on the left, are taking advantage of this situation to push a radical agenda. And guess what? These socialists, these leftists are winning. They're being victorious in their efforts to advance a far left agenda. It's happening here in the Denver metro area. Aurora right now, we're seeing where there are peaceful protesters who are just being drowned out time and time again by the radical left, which is insistent upon pushing their agenda come hell or high water. And they'll be as disruptive as they can to accomplish their objectives. I'm Jimmy Sangenberger. This is News Talk 710 KNUS, the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. When we come back, going to read in full the Declaration of Independence, offer some observations, and play Ray Charles, America the Beautiful. As we continue on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, once again, News Talk 710 KNUS. Here's a little Warren Haynes taking us out with his tune, Just Before the Bullets Fly. In fact, I think originally a Greg Allman tune. Very fitting that Warren Haynes would do this cover. Keep it here. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
leave y'all. Everything gonna be all right.
And left me, did me a favor when he did.
Shoot.
He'd been lying all along about another woman and two kids.
Shoot.
I guess he wasn't mine anyway, so I'm not sad to see him go.
Shoot.
He was no good anyhow, and he spent up all my dough.
Yes, indeed, folks, I do believe everything is going to be all right, just as Loretta Davis sings. Welcome back to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Final segment now, not just for this show, but for my three-show run this Independence Day weekend, having filled in for Stephen Tubbs yesterday. Definitely check out the podcast for that four-hour program. Really got into a lot of good things on the show. Then again this morning when I sat in for George Brockler, and now, of course, the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. And on this Independence Day, it is especially great to be with you on News Talk 710 KNUS. And just as I did last night on the Stephen Tubbs Show, and now and this morning on with George Brockler, I want to read for you the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. Gather around your kids, grandkids, your friends. Pull up a copy of the Declaration and let's read together what was issued by the Second Continental Congress on July 4th, 1776. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for those future security. For their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity
which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused his assent to laws, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on the rights of the people. He has refused for a long time, after such dissolutions, to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers, incapable of annihilation, have returned to the people at large for their exercise. The state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states, for that purpose obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of lands. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out our substance. He has kept among us, in times of peace, standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation, for quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they shall commit on the inhabitants of these states, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these colonies, for taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our governments, for suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny, already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy, scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages, and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. He has constrained our fellow citizens, taken captive on the high seas, to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrections among us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages, whose known rules of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our emigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity. And we have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They, too, have been deaf to the voice of justice and of consanguinity. We must therefore acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war and peace, friends. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
Truly incredible. Those words from July 4th, 1776, with facts presented to a candid world, laying out clearly through all of its grievances the Congress's disdain for the way in which King George III was going about his reign. Disdain for the usurpations of liberty here in these American colonies. They laid out the case in no uncertain terms, listing out all of the objections that they had, although there were probably some more, but the key ones. And when you look at the logical strain, the Declaration begins by laying forth some very significant principles, revolutionary, truly revolutionary principles that our Creator endows us with certain unalienable rights, like life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that governments are instituted among men because of the consent of the governed. That's where they get their power from. And when a government goes well beyond the confines of its authority and tramples upon the rights of the people, it is the right of the people. Indeed, it is the duty to abolish it. And here's why this government, the government of King George, has gone way too far. And they list out grievance after grievance after grievance. And when you look at the actual U.S. Constitution, Professor Jonathan White was making this point earlier today when I filled in for George Brockler. So much of what the Constitution includes is derived directly from the Declaration of Independence. Many of the grievances were included in the Constitution itself or the Bill of Rights, or at least they were addressed to protect against that kind of tyranny that we saw under King George III. Remarkable, truly remarkable. In the way in which they laid out principles and then the objections and then separated, formally separated from Great Britain, from the British Empire, by saying, look, we've complained through the proper channels. We've petitioned our grievances, and they have not only been ignored, but we have been cracked down on by King George. He's gone too far, persisting and persisting and persisting, and we're not going to take it anymore. Thus, we're dissolved. Our bond with England is dissolved, and we are absolved of all allegiance to the British crown. As a free country, as an independent nation, we now have all the powers of an independent country. And for the support of this declaration, they close, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. That's what we're celebrating today on this Independence Day, is literally independence from an oppressive regime and bringing about a free country. The Declaration of Independence was the promise. The Constitution was the fulfillment of that promise of freedom. We're straying far from the Constitution, but make no mistake, it is, as Frederick Douglass put it, a glorious liberty document, the roots of which are contained expressly in this very short Declaration of Independence. I've been saying this quote over and over again, but in his 1852 speech, What to the Slave is the Fourth of July?, a man born a slave, Frederick Douglass, said this of the Declaration of Independence, that it's, quote, the ring bolt to the chain of your nation's destiny. So indeed I regard it. The principles contained in that instrument are saving principles. Stand by those principles. Be true to them on all occasions, in all places, against all foes, and at whatever cost. And as the monuments are being torn down, and the statues being torn down, honoring our forefathers, including the writers of the Declaration of Independence, we must heed these words of Frederick Douglass, that the signers of the Declaration of Independence were brave men. They were great men, too, great enough to give fame to a great age. It does not often happen to a nation to raise at one time such a number of truly great men. The point from which I am compelled to view them is not certainly the most favorable, and yet I cannot contemplate their great deeds with less than admiration. They were statesmen, patriots, and heroes, and for the good they did and the principles they contended for, I will unite with you to honor their memory. Indeed, on this 4th of July, on this Independence Day, let's unite with Frederick Douglass to honor the memory of the writers of the Declaration, Jefferson and the others, of those who brought birth to this new nation conceived in liberty. And let us celebrate their memory and the freedoms we take for granted here in America today. That is it for us today, my friends, and I want to leave you with this wonderful rendition by the great Ray Charles of America the Beautiful. Happy Independence Day, and may God bless America.
Singing something like this. Listen here. Oh, beautiful, far spacious skies, far amber waves of grain, far purple mountain majesties. Now, wait a minute. I'm talking about America, sweet America. You know, God done shed his grace on thee. He crowned thy good. Yes, he did. Heavy brotherhood from sea to shining sea. You know, I wish I had somebody to help me sing this.